Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and trademark lawsuits. My name is Dan Moore, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host. John Maltz is here. Hi, John.
I am the lead superhero on this.
Okay, gotcha.
Just so you know.
Thank you. I appreciate you clarifying that. Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy.
That's true, my fellow tadpole. Maltz is the only man that can pull off ketchup and mustard.
It ain't nothing.
And boy, later he does pull off ketchup and mustard. Doesn't
yeah, yo. Has it pulled off for him? Yeah,
a little bit of relish.
Yep.
Oh God.
Oh well. If anybody is still listening, we are here to talk about She-Hulk Attorney at Law, episode 8, the penultimate episode, entitled, you know it, Ribbit and Rip It.
Does she actually say penultimate episode in the? I couldn't remember. I had to go back and look.
She says next week is the finale.
I don't think she says penultimate.
She does.
I really wanted
that
to
would
say
be good though.
Yeah, anti penultimate is my favorite.
Last week, sure. John Maltz, would you like to give us a rundown of this?
I would love
pivotal
to.
Episode.
Yep. So there are two guys stealing TVs from an appliance store when Leapfrog shows up and tries to subdue them, which doesn't go so well. So he uses his jet shoes to try and get away, but they catch on fire, giving him third-degree burns. As he later explains to Jen, the suit, which is made by Luke, was supposed to be fireproof. Jen thinks he has a case against Luke, but she doesn't want to take on Luke because, you know, he makes lots of nice stuff for her. Holloway says Leapfrog's dad is a big client, so she has to take the case, but can try to negotiate with Luke. Luke is working on her dress for the Female Lawyer of the Year award, and does not take her insinuations kindly, and he rips up her dress, and they have some words. In court later, Luke's lawyer is late, but when he shows up, it's none other than Matt Murdock. Jen wants to depose Luke's other clients, but Matt gets the request thrown out after... they have a bit of a repartee that touches on how they both do their superheroing, and he also drops the bomb that the Sokovia Accords have been rescinded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was a good little bit of business. I liked his argument.
Yeah.
I liked all of it. Like, that was actually, this has actually got legally kind of interesting. Forget putting aside the Sokovia Accords thing. Like, it's the... Like the privacy angle of Luke's clients. Like, does that outweigh the good, the public good of the... Anyway.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah, and they're both, you know, sort of arguing.
Yeah,
from their personal perspectives
and which is reasonable legal perspectives. Like I just liked it. I'm like, that is an actual honest, interesting debate.
If only he hadn't put jet fuel in his rocket boots.
yeah. So Leapfrog has his suit with him, and Matt smells the fuel, and then it gets revealed that he used jet fuel in the boots, which basically invalidated his warranty. The case is dismissed, and Jen pleads with Luke to take her back, which he does not. In the bar later, Matt sends Jen an appletini, a little Hulk joke, and then he joins her. They hit it off. He encourages her to take up superheroing, and then he gets a call and has to go. Jen gets a text from Todd, who wants to see her immediately. He turns out he bought a Wakandan war spear at an auction that Wakanda wants back because it was stolen. He's trying to put his awkward moves on Jen, and she has none of it and leaves.
He tries the Wakanda forever thing, and I like...
Oh, yeah, and he does that, too.
I love how...
So bad.
Oh, I love how she shut him down there. It's like, that makes me feel really uncomfortable. Don't do that. And he's so proud of, like, stealing artifacts from Africa.
That is awful.
Which is, like...
He's the worst.
That's how we are introduced to Killmonger. It's like, people like you, Killmonger wants to kill. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of like, Killmonger... Man,
Killmonger,
if you had less of...
Right. I mean, I made those bumper stickers or those shirts, but I always wanted to make one that said Killmonger had a good point.
Yeah. He wasn't right, but he had a point, I think, is the distinction there.
Yeah. When she gets home, she gets a call from Leapfrog, who is being attacked. Jen puts on her super suit and shows up to find Daredevil clinging to Leapfrog's car. We get a fun fight as Leapfrog gets away. Jen does some serious property damage, and then Hulk claps him and pulls off his helmet. Rude. She discovers it's Matt, and they discuss how he does what he does, which is news to Jen. Matt says Leapfrog has kidnapped Luke, so the two head off to the lily pad where Leapfrog has a crew.
With a giant neon sign over it. I love it.
That is my favorite subtle joke in this episode, is my super secret lair Why is that a place I should know where that is? You know, and then it's got a giant neon sign.
It feels like an Arkham game where there's just, you know, the Joker's hideout and just neon or something. It's like, well, I'm going to check out Ace Chemicals and that creepy Ferris wheel. Like, that's where I'm going to go look for the Joker.
Matt can tell that there are 25 of these, I guess they're goons.
Not henchmen.
He and Jen are extremely flirty. Matt takes out a bunch of them in a hallway and almost gets into another big hallway fight, but then Jen smashes through the roof and knocks them all out.
It's such an arbitrary hallway, too. Like, it looks like a warehouse. Why?
Why is there a hallway?
Why would it be constructed like that? Just because it's awesome. That's why. Because you got to put Matt in a hallway.
Yep. She busts into the lair and frees Luke as Matt takes out all the goons. Leapfrog tries to leave, but just falls out the window. Luke, you know, having been saved by Jen now, agrees to make her dress. Then she meets Matt on the roof. They have a moment, and then they head back to Jen's place. Next morning, Matt is doing the walk of shame. Jen is wondering why the episode isn't over when Nikki shows up. It's time to go to the gala, apparently. Jen's parents are there, and so is freaking Todd. The award is given to 6 women, apparently, including Mallory. They hit the stage, and Jen is thanking everyone when Intelligentsia takes over the screen and starts showing her texts and a video of her and Josh. She smashes down the screen, and everyone runs. She sees the Intelligentsia guys and grabs one of them, but damage control is there, so she drops him, and he gets away. Then she turns and looks plaintively into the camera.
There is a lot of stuff in this episode that is amazing, including I like every bit with, I mean, I like everything with Matt. Charlie Cox is just, my wife has not seen any of the Daredevil series, and she's like, I really like him. I like his delivery. Like, I think he's really good, but I like the series. I'm like, it's a lot darker than this.
Yeah.
But I love all my favorite little, I like unappreciated jokes. The point where he's like in court, he's like, he's lying. Don't ask me how I know. And the judge is like, we can all tell he's lying.
We can all tell he's lying, Mr. Murdoch.
I love
the smugness with which he delivers, like, trust me, I know he's lying.
Right.
I kind of look like they totally Diana Troy'd him a little bit there, right? Like, where it's like, okay, thanks, Troy. We get it. Like, clearly this Cardassian guy is like kind of lying through his teeth.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Right.
But I like,
he's lying. He's lying, Captain. Yeah.
What I love is the smug look that he gives Jacobson? I'm forgetting his name. Luke Jacobson. That's
Luke.
It.
Luke Jacobson.
Yeah, such a generic fashion name that I get it mixed up. Yeah. So he gives Luke that look, and Luke just points at him like, yeah, you got it, buddy. Like, they are actually, they seem to like each other. Like, he's quite friendly. Like, Luke is super happy that he's there, and he's totally,
he's
like,
made him some suits.
Yeah.
That was a good line, too. He's made me some suits. Doesn't look like it.
A couple of new suits. Like, doesn't look like it.
You know, where Jen asks the thing I immediately assumed she would ask after unmasking him. Do you just pretend to be blind?
Yeah.
Which is the thing you would ask, right? Like, that's exactly what
she's
like,
that's not cool. She's not cool, but whatever. That's problematic or something. And he's like, no, I'm actually blind. I love this introduction to the character, because within a few minutes, I don't have the timeline up right now, but like, let's say 10 minutes of the show, we're introduced to him as a lawyer. We know that he's a good one. We understand his sensory capabilities in terms of his being able to detect that they're lying, his sense of smell, being able to detect the rocket boosty things, the fighting, basically everything. The echolocation, how he fights, like smooth and moving around, like he's more of an acrobatic guy than a deliver punch kind of guy, you know, at least against the Hulk. Everything we need to know about who this character is and how they operate gets done in an incredibly economical way, and they nailed it. They really did.
Right. Even if you didn't know who Daredevil was, you had came in knowing nothing about Daredevil, you get a complete picture of this character.
Yeah. What was Kat's takeaway? Did she got
really
it?
Liked him. Yeah. She really liked it, like the character. I mean, we paused a couple times to discuss, like, you know, exactly, because she always wants to know. She always wants to stop and ask, like, all right, so what's the deal? Like, and I was like, all right, this. And she's like, ah, that's cool, you know. And I think that it's, like you said, I think it's done really efficiently. It just sort of walks you through all the details you need to know. And to the point that I think we'll discuss a little bit, a lot of subversion on this character in terms of this character's, like, appearance in the Netflix show, right? Like,
right.
He's, oh, yeah. yeah. Not to say that Matt doesn't have his moments in the show, but like the whole point, I was like explaining later, the whole thing in the show is like he's super Catholic, right? So it's like really tortured and really all this guilt and everything. Whereas I joked in the Incomparable Members Letter, I think this is L.A. Matt. L.A. Matt is just here to have a good time, kick sure. back, you know?
Yeah. It's mm-hmm. like when Don Draper yeah. goes to L.A. and he just kind of exactly, right. totally different yeah. guy. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. I love that aspect that we can see a different version of Matt who is recognizably the same character, but is also a different facet of that character. I think it's kind of smart to handle it that way. And
maybe his show will open with him giving confessional after having returned from L.A. telling the priest about like knocking super boots with
I'm not
Hulk.
Sure that he feels guilty about that.
I don't think he does, and I don't think he...
I love the fact he walks out with like he's like whistling as he walks down the street. He's like morning, you know.
I don't think that's a problem for him.
I don't think it is at all. And here's the thing: he's cool as a cucumber. I mean, he's got like a little bit of he can censor heart rate thing, but he's not like pickup arresting anything at all. Because he's sitting on the, it's on the screen for me right now. He's sitting on the rooftop with her there, and he's like, "Well, maybe next time I'm in town, I'll take you to dinner." Perfectly reasonable. Like, look, we had a good time. We obviously get along. Next time I'm in town, I'll look you up. And she's like, "Could we just skip all that?" Perfect. Like, what? There's nothing to feel guilty about at all, which plays in to the end of this episode, which makes me hulky a little bit. But. Let's wrap up Daredevil first. Differences from Netflix. Go. somebody outline
Miles. Matt smiles.
Well, there's the costume.
Yeah.
The costume's minorly.
I mean, he does smile. You know, he does smile and joke. I mean, I think, you know, when you're out of your, you know, he's like,
he's on vacation.
He is there to work as a lawyer, but he, you know, Daredevil is his real job, right?
Yeah.
And so he doesn't have to worry about anybody's safety particularly. He's just there to put a beat down on Leapfrog and rescue Luke. I get the sense that
when she went to the bathroom or something, he got a text from Luke being like, "I've been kidnapped by Dumbhead." And he's like, "Okay, gotta go." And if you're Luke, who are you going to, I mean, I'm definitely going to text Matt, like,
Sure.
I mean, Luke knows who he is.
Yeah, exactly.
He made the helmet for him.
He knows exactly who he is. So, like, if it's like, okay, I want somebody competent that's actually going to do a good job and save me here, I'll call this guy.
I like that they did a lot of stuff subverting the tropes of the Netflix show, right? Like, I'm going to go into the warehouse, I'm going to take out guys one by one, right? And you're like,
right.
And she's like, that's why would you do that? I'm a Hulk, you know? Yeah. He's like, I've taken out a lot of warehouses full of goods.
And the fact that she doesn't have any idea who he is, right?
Right.
They pull in on him a little bit and they start playing the music and she's just like, nope, no, nothing's happening. I'm not getting this.
I love the way he fought. He is more juiced than the Netflix version. Netflix version was a real good Street Fighter guy. This guy is like dodging punches from a She-Hulk and hopping over her like Spidey almost. Like he's more superpower than you could possibly be in, you know.
I think it's similar to what they did with Kingpin in Hawkeye, right?
Exactly.
Like they've amped up these characters to make them a little more comic booky as opposed to just like grounded versions of these characters, which I think is what Netflix always tried to do. Was like, what if these guys, but like they were real, as opposed to the MCU, which is like we're not interested in that. We want to show off these characters in terms of like channeling their comic identities.
They also need to dial Matt in league with, let's say, Spidey, right?
He needs to be able to hold his own, right? Like, from Netflix and against She-Hulk would have got one punch and he's done.
Yeah, right? I mean, of course, like anybody. So they need to dial him in. It's like, okay, he's really, really good, but kind of, you know, not quite X level. And I think they did a great job of that. His movement is far more fluid than even what we saw on Netflix, which Netflix was... exaggerated parkour. This is like
he jumps off a building, right? And then parkours down the side of a building.
Which is incredible.
It's awesome.
It is awesome. Yeah. And maybe there's somebody who could do that. I don't know what Jackie Chan is doing these days, but like it's way over the top.
I hope he doesn't, because he's getting up there. Like,
have you seen that?
He's gonna hurt himself.
Have you seen that movie where he's
eventually?
He has hurt himself a lot of times.
Yeah, but I mean, he's gonna hurt himself permanently.
Yeah, have you seen that one where he's sliding down like a glass roof of a skyscraper?
Yes.
And my god, it is like bananas. Yeah. I hope he was on a wire, but who knows with that guy. Anyway.
Yeah.
Go.
I enjoy that we did the lawyer angle. I really love the scene where they're fighting all the henchmen and they're trading legal strategies. And he's like, wait, is the ninja guy a lawyer too? Yeah, it's like, I just enjoy legal dramas.
Did you notice when he starts giving the legal advice, he's got a guy in like a, he took a swing at him and he's got his arm in a lock kind of thing before putting it down. Do you notice what the weapon was, the guy that was swinging at him?
No.
It was a net that you would use to pull fish out of a pond.
we might want to spend a couple minutes on his lair
on Leapfrog Frogger.
And the great thing is, like, she picks up that arcade machine and she just drops it. She doesn't even throw it at anybody. She just like sort of smashes it to the ground derisively.
He's all mad.
I'm just gonna destroy this because I'm so mad at you right now.
Between the lily pad with the giant neon sign and the, I love that this car is green, terrible green. I mean, I like that character just went all in on being.
Yeah,
basically
he has like a
character.
Light, like a bat signal.
Yes, I saw that, the frog light. Yeah, all that tadpoles, the leap squad. Yeah, all of this is just A+. No notes.
I like the guys knocking over the TV store at the beginning. It's like Syracuse talking about OLEDs versus like QLEDs or something.
Right.
I was like, that's a funny, dumb thing to put into a script, you know.
What was your opinion of, this is the one thing that gave me pause in this episode, is what was your opinion of the She-Hulk Daredevil fight in terms of Jen's choices, I guess?
She's not a great fighter. She's awful. She's throwing a car.
I felt weird about all the damage she did, right? She like rips up a parking garage and throws a car around.
Oh, completely.
And I love the bit at the end. They make a great joke about the end where she's like, I should leave a note. But still, like, you get the feeling maybe, she doesn't, she's new to the whole super wing thing. Yes, she just like trained with Bruce and learned all the skills, but learning how to deploy them is a different matter.
Right. Yeah, she is trashing the place. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like Link showing up to like some village and just like walking around smashing bottles and bottles and stuff and busting into people's houses to find arrows.
Did you know you had arrows in
what
here?
A jerk.
I love those games.
I felt a little bad, like with her destroying everything. I was like, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to feel bad about this or not.
I was feeling bad. I was like, oh, you're going over the top when she slammed the roof of the garage that they were on, and he manages to escape. I'm like, ooh, that's maybe here the moment, and he seems like a real bad guy, so maybe you want to get him. But like when she picked up a car and threw it at him, I'm like, that's...
Well, she threw it past him. I think that was more to like, but you know, throw it in his path to stop him from getting away.
But I don't know.
If she wanted to hit him, she probably could have.
But again, it's somebody's car. So
Somebody's car. Oh yeah, I want the absolutely. Tag. The property damage stuff is.
I wanted the tag scene to be somebody like coming back with their like car fob, being like boop boop, and their car just totaled, and they're like, "Well, what?"
I do like the way she stops. Not Todd, whatever. Leapfrog. Is she just like his car just crashes into her?
Yeah. Right.
It's like she does not care about this idiot even a little bit, but. You know, except he can't. Kidnapping's bad, so she's going to go save him. Over the top. And when she plowed through the door at the hotel, right into the damage control people, I suspect all of this damage, this little rampage, is going to come back to haunt her.
We'll talk about the end scene in a second.
I got to separate
some stuff to talk about there. Other stuff I did enjoy, and this might have been just me, but I laughed a lot when she makes the joke about, is this the moment where there's a twist, and then Nikki jumps out? Because I couldn't stop thinking about what you guys talked about last week, where John was talking about the conspiracy corner, where she's like, Agatha's daughter or something?
Yeah.
And I was like, did they know that people would be conspiracy theorying that, and did that just set it up, or is that just coincidence?
I think they're just, they were like, what if her name was Nikki, kind of like Nicholas Scrimm? I mean, I think they may be having fun with that, but, you know.
It's hard to tell, right? Like, it's hard to tell.
I still don't think she's...
No, I've written that off. That theory is dead to me. It's out.
Yeah, I think I've said this before, but I do think that Marvel plays their cards close to their vest such that when things line up, they look like geniuses, and when things don't, you're still left guessing, so... Mm-hmm. But she jumped out with her her brushes in between her hands like Wolverine claws.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, it's nice. Not the homage we were expecting, maybe.
Also good how difficult it is to get the Daredevil suit off.
Yeah.
A lot of great stuff in this episode. I think this was this is the concern. When you bring in, we talked about this a bunch, right? Like, Daredevil is probably the most anticipated character in like Marvel up until this point, right? Because people really wanted him to come back.
Yeah.
After the Netflix show got canceled.
Yeah.
And
I think even before the Netflix show, people were like, man, Daredevil would be great. That was real early in the run. I don't know how they would have slotted it in, but like, I'm pretty sure people would have been thrilled to see Daredevil there.
Only they've done a movie or something. No. Yeah.
Well, whatever. They could. Who cares? You know what I mean? Like, in terms of his street, what they did on the Netflix show, I don't think would have been appropriate for the MCU.
Specifically, people. I mean, and everybody, I think, feels very positively about Charlie Cox. And I think it's the tough needle they had to thread on this one is how do you bring in a character that beloved and that high profile and not have them take over the show? And I think they did a great job of having him exist and work well as a sort of foil slash, you know, character operating on par with Jen, but never forgetting that this is Jen's show. And I think there's probably a lot of people who are upset about that because they're like, I just want Daredevil all the time. And it's like, well, tough nuts. This isn't his show, right? And I think they handled it very, very well. I think
I've got two things to say about that. A, you'll get it. He's got his own show and he's probably going to show up in Echo. B, I was right, and I love that. I was about to say I don't like rubbing your faces in it, but I called one episode, and I was right.
You did call. Yeah, unless he shows up again next week, which we can't write.
But he's
off,
not. But he's going home the next day. Like this is it. He's done. Like, because
there's no room for him.
Exactly. I think the argument, and it was a very sensible argument that you guys were making, was like, well, we got to see him do lawyer stuff. We got to see him do superhero stuff, and we got to see a little setup. You're right. But we saw all of these in this incredibly tightly written episode. So great. Yep. You know, I think one and done, and that's perfect. Maybe if anything, hopefully not with Jen. Hopefully him and Jen get together whenever they're in town together. But in terms of this episode,
I think if anything, maybe Bruce shows up again next week, but I don't even know about that. So
I don't want that because the man coming in to save the day.
Well, but you could do it. I think
you have to do it like that.
Yes. I mean, I think he maybe shows up at the end after everything gets resolved to hook into whatever he was off doing and be like, hey, I need your help for something. And maybe that sets up a second season or whatever they go on to do after that.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's going to be the, you know, Hulk Ex Machina or whatever.
The only thing that occurs to me as possible is if the the guys from the therapy circle come back to help out in some way.
Yeah, I wouldn't write off Tim Roth showing up and being like, I don't want to be Abomination, but for you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Any final thoughts?
No, nothing. I was rewatching. So Hank hadn't seen that episode. And so we sat down yesterday to catch him up and, was watching that episode again thinking, assuming there's no sort of weird ulterior motive going on here, I think the bad guys in this show are simply just internet jerks, really, you know?
I think it's about
the banality of evil.
Banality of misogyny, probably, too.
And the banality of misogyny, and that it's just going to end up being Todd and a bunch of, like,
schmucks.
You know, it's the season of Buffy where the bad guys are.
Yes. Yeah.
Those three idiots.
Yeah. So I was going to say this because what we have yet to do is talk about the final scene, which I think sets up this banality of evil thing. I guess, John, finish your thoughts like with regards to that final scene.
And so watching that episode again made me think, you know, I believe these guys are sincere currently, at any rate. And if they are sincere, there is space for them to come back because they want to help her out. But that's, you know, it doesn't have to happen and may not happen. But I think there's room for that to happen without making it, men save the day.
Well, and
trope.
Let me throw, can I add on to that too? I also feel like in terms of like sort of loose ends hanging out there, I would throw Titania in there too, in terms of somebody who it feels like might come back and maybe be on Jen's side. Like I kind of feel like the ending version of this is, and this may be getting ahead of ourselves a bit, but like, I don't think there is a time and place where this would have felt like something like, oh, we've totally ruined Jen's life. But I think that this show wants to make the argument that people realize who the real bad guys are. And that it's not her fault and that she's the victim here. And so what I think we're going to get is a surprising resolution where, like, you might feel in a typical story, like, oh, now she might lose her job or whatever. It's like, but people are going to be like, that's not your fault. These people committed a criminal act to invade your privacy and everything. Like, we're not going to fire you. That would be terrible, right? Like, that's kind of where I think maybe if the show is smart, it's pivoting.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because when I saw Holloway's expression, I thought, oh, he's appalled and he's going to fire her, and that will set up her setting up her own practice.
Like, right, which is possible.
She's done numerous times in the comic books. Yeah. So that, I think that's still possible, but it's also possible he's simply appalled at what they've done.
Yes.
The conversation with Matt sort of makes that an outcome that I suspect. Because he tells her that, like, hey, you can be a defender during the day.
Yeah.
Not an Avenger / defender, but you can be a public defender or a defense attorney during the day and a superhero during the night. Or that's his case, you know, for when the law fails, you get to be a superhero, and otherwise you get to use the law to help people. And that excited Jen, like that you could see, and I don't mean like, okay, you're hot, obviously, but it got her like, man, that was also happening,
but that was separate.
Yeah, exactly. But they go hand in hand, you know? And so I can see this outcome where she decides to leave this law firm. And start her own thing and do a little bit more like the Matt Murdock or alternative thing, kind of.
Sure. Yeah, I think I think that's a sensible outcome either for this show and where it leaves the characters for the future, or if there is a second season of this show, which I think is a possibility.
Either she goes to the movies, which she could do anyway, or there's a second season. I would like both, please.
Yeah. So let's talk about this scene that I don't want to talk about, which I keep bringing up because I kind of want to get it off the plate now. I have conflicting wants, apparently. I meant to bring it up last week, the female lawyer.
Yeah.
I remember I was with a friend of mine, and we were hanging out, having beers, and we have a mutual friend for many, many years, like since my childhood. I'm like, oh yeah, Ben always told me you're the funniest woman he knew. And she's like, yeah, I've heard that and I hate it. And I'm like, oh yeah. As soon as I'd said that to her, because I'd been cracking up, she's an incredibly funny person. I was like, I had not realized how diminutive that is. This was years ago. Like I've learned since then. But like, I meant that as a compliment. Like, yeah, man, like the guy I know to be really, really funny finds you really, really funny. And that's great. Like, I'm not surprised that we're all laughing at the same things. Not how it comes across when you give that little, when you tag female in the beginning of it.
And what if you then find out there were five others?
Right? Exactly. Exactly. It's so tokenistic. It's so, it just underscores the fact. Like, even if they just had female lawyer of the year and they gave it to Jen, and like male lawyer of the year would have been, well, Puck doesn't seem so bad, but whatever that asshole guy was at the beginning.
But they would have called it Lawyer of the Year.
Right,
exactly.
But yeah, well, it'd been Lawyer of the Year and the Female Lawyer of the Year, and like it would have been somebody that we know to be crap. You know, like we've just seen them just get smoked in court. And then especially when there's five others. I really like Mallory when what is effectively incredibly innocuous stuff starts showing. I mean, there's stuff for like receipts for like restaurants. A couple of pictures of Captain America's ass, which I will admit to probably, I've probably ass. Got a few pictures of Captain America's ass on my computer. Like it probably exists.
America's ass.
I got a lot of storage space. What was there was not damning so much as private. And then they start showing her making out with a guy on. It doesn't matter what date it was, but this happened to be the third date. It was not like which I don't know. That's a dumb convention. Nobody follow any of that stuff. Just do what you feel is right and be you and no pressure. Everything's good. Either way. But I was in an innocuous relationship, and there was nothing wrong with it. Certainly nothing to be ashamed of. And it, the fact that it shames her in front of these people is so just telling about us, right? Like that, just the way the world approaches this kind of scandal. It's not even a scandal, right? It's like
she's doxxed, right? That's essentially
she is doxxed.
It's a combination of dox and revenge porn, basically.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going. The revenge porn thing I wanted to save because it touches on something that happened in Stargirl like last season, which I was also very, very uncomfortable with, where that high school kid had, I don't know, a topless photo go around school and everybody was shaming her for it. This is the same kind of thing. I mean, obviously, she's a grown woman, but still, the onus of proprietary being on the woman is completely and utterly broken and unfair, and it is underscored in this episode. It's clearly a bad thing, but like, there's laws against that, and there damn well should be, and it's just such a breach of trust, and it's not consensual, and it's rapey, effectively, you know? Depending on your legal definition of rape, I don't really care to debate the legalities of it. It is non-consensual sexual exploitation, and it is horrible. And it was one of the worst things I've seen done in the MCU, like in terms of like, that could be a real life thing. This could actually happen. Thanos.
Not only that, so the other thing is, I mean, the reason I assume that the reason damage control shows up so quickly is that they've also swatted her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It's an interesting theory. I mean, they're setting up the possibility that this is all like a long setup, basically, right? Make her look bad and show that she's, you know, oh, she's out of control. And this kind of goes back to the stuff from the premiere about being a woman and being able to show anger, right? Mm-hmm. And like here in a place where she is legitimately upset by something that has happened that has, you know, invaded her privacy. And, you know, you're, like you said, Mallory sort of tries to get her not to react. And, you know, I think coming from a place that makes sense given who Mallory is, right? Like, Mallory's whole thing was like, I don't play any card I don't have to play, right? Like, I keep stuff to my chest and I, you know, play the game, basically.
Yeah. Not an invalid point of view.
And
she's trying to do her best. And in fact, like a good lawyer, like, just keep your mouth shut. We're going to take care of this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So having, like, you know, Jen still like legitimately get pissed off. Mm-hmm. And obviously she's also still a Hulk, right? And like, as we've seen in like earlier in the first episode, I think as well, you know, just because you have it under control most of the time doesn't mean that you don't, it's still something that comes from anger, right? Like it's rooted in anger.
Yeah.
And so there's always the possibility of like, you know what? Something's just gonna, there's gonna be the last straw, right?
Arguably earlier this episode when she's trashing a garage and throwing cars at people, more out of control than you would expect, you know, Jen to be. Maybe just Jen couldn't do that, but you know what I mean? Like, I think when you get to the point where you throw a car at somebody, what do you, like, you'd have no idea if they, I think it presents a pattern of being a little cavalier with the outcomes of your physicality, which is a very Hulky kind of way to be, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, like in this one, she tears the computer screens down. Who wouldn't want to do that if that's what's happening? Like,
and you had the ability to do it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Todd. We were lucky that Josh didn't come back this episode because it takes a lot of... Man, going back and editing all those swear words was a pain in the ass, so I appreciate you. I appreciate you, Dan.
Yeah.
We see Todd at the auction. There is a scene, I forget who's looking around. Is it, I don't know if it's Jen or Mallory. We see like a POV sort of thing, scanning the room, looking as people exit.
We see the gang, I don't know.
We see the gang at the corner, but we don't see... Mm-hmm. Todd leaving. I suspect the jackass that she...
He is there. He's there at the table with Holloway as the whole show begins.
Yeah, I think he's the one that she got her hands on.
I would think so, too. But it's hard to tell at this point.
Yeah, I don't know.
The person seems to have a fair amount of hair coming out the back.
Do you want Zapruder-ing this as we talk?
Was Zapruder-ing it a bit. Yeah, seems to have a fair amount of hair coming out the back of his hat.
Could also be Josh.
Could be Todd. It could be Josh.
You may want to check out the shades, because he's got shades on and a mask, and I think the shades were something that Jackass Todd was wearing previously. Mm. They're sort of elongated rather than being rounder or anything, you know?
Could be. Yeah.
Anyway.
So,
well, we'll find out. I mean, we'll find out next week.
Yeah, right. I mean, and I am curious. I don't... So, you know, our contention is at this point that this is mainly, as we said, a show where it's about the banality of like people who are just not super villains, but just super villains. I'm curious to see how that works, because it's actually promising in one way, which is I feel like it means a show that is unlikely to end in a giant fight. And that kind of is okay, given that this show has been so structured as a sitcom, right? Like that makes sense that each episode has been kind of self-contained. It's not really a thing that's felt like every episode we need to continually up the stakes so that we end with this huge, you know, cataclysmic battle. You can kind of do a self-contained episode that deals with the fallout from all this stuff that's happened, and how do you defeat something that is frankly you can't punch. I mean, you can punch those guys. It will shatter their skulls. But like, you know, that won't solve the problem, right? That won't solve the thing that they've done to you.
I suspect that we will be presented with an avatar as something that you can punch, however that manages to be. We are led to believe from the previous episode that somehow Josh secured a blood sample. We have been told this episode that Todd had acquired vibranium, which he'd previously been asking can pierce your skin, and he's got a spear of it, which could have been repurposed into the syringe that we saw. She mentions a Red Hulk. I don't want to see Red Hulk.
That's
a red herring. I think the Red Hulk idea is
it's a Red Hulk herring.
It's dumb. It's dumb. It's just dumb. There's a lot of dumb Hulk comics. That's fine.
Plus, William Hurt's dead, so let's just
But they could make it to be somebody else. But what I do think is that we will end up
Harrison Ford.
I know.
I do think that
Josh's hair is not long enough to be that guy. Just
okay, thanks. Now I'm going to put
some. Grown it out.
There's going to be like an M5 computer behind that. I do think that we will get something that she has to smash. It's possible that they take Titania and juice her with Hulk blood and give her a spear to try to defeat Jen or something. I don't know.
But I think in that case the way you
that
win
seems
that,
unlikely.
Yeah. The way you win that fight is by not fighting her and being like, come on, we're having like guys make us fight. Like this is dumb, right?
Exactly.
That,
yeah.
That is a fight that gets solved without battling, in my opinion. So,
I'm with you. I would like to see a resolution that doesn't involve a massive fight. I just don't know if Marvel as an institution has the wherewithal to do it. Yeah. And if they do, maybe this is a show to do it.
I don't know. I think the showrunners on this show are pretty... I mean, they. I am surprised at the amount of leeway that they have been given to tell this story. I'm very pleased at the amount of leeway. This is a lot of this is stuff that I wish was in Captain Marvel.
Yes.
But, regardless, it's great to see it now.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah.
But anyway, outstanding items are her blood, which we assume that Josh took a vibranium spear, Titania, Abomination, and the Intelligentsia. I'm assuming that the Intelligentsia are the people with the adamantium or whatever the heck it's called, with the syringe. We're wrapping them up into one unit, right? And we suspect that Josh and Todd are sort of involved in that somehow. But those are sort of the outstanding items, and a lot of them are. Like, between the blood and the spear, I think we're in combat-y territory. That's it. And maybe the Abomination shows up and Porcupine just hugs him to death or something. I don't know. Then maybe there's going to be some resolution. But
yeah, I still think I feel like this show has tried really hard to set itself apart from the previous episodes. I disagree. There will be action and there will be a fight, but I'm not sure the fight will be the resolving incident, which fascinates me. I don't think it should be exactly.
Yeah.
I kind of want to see them pull that off without that being the case because
I actively want to see Titania come back and have her. Yeah, I want Titania to come back and have her back. Be like, you know what? I saw what happened to you, and screw this. That's not. It's unacceptable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
ratings.
Yeah, I think we should do ratings. Who wants to go first?
Let's give it to John.
Let's give it to John. Let's give it up for John.
It's a biff. It's upsetting at the end. You know, I think I was, when I first watched it, kind of mad. Well, mad. Not kind of mad. I was definitely mad. And, you know, in a little, you know, you get that feeling where you're like, oh, I just watched something that was unpleasant. And so I felt like maybe a little bit down on the episode, but watching it again, I was like, no, this is a really good episode. And it did that on purpose. And that's part of the whole point of the show. So. I think, yeah. And then there's all the stuff with Charlie Cox, which is fantastic. They have such great chemistry together and that seems like a relatively rare thing. It's pretty much a rare thing in the MCU as well. So I kind of wish that they would, I don't need them to get married, but I would like to see them together more.
Yeah.
And not necessarily, you know, not just have this be like, oh, you know, they had a good time together. But that's mostly just because of the acting ability. As far as, you know, as far as what consenting adults do, that's perfectly fine.
But Dan?
Yeah, I agree. It's a biff for me. I really enjoyed everything in this episode. Basically everything. I mean, Charlie Cox, a delight to have on screen. And like John said, the rapport between the two of them is fantastic. I felt very much, you know, kind of like the same way we talked a bit in Hawkeye about Hailee Steinfeld and Florence Pugh. You're like, again, like, you would be an idiot not to watch this and be like, get these two characters together as much as you possibly can, right? And I think, you know, I did see a quote somewhere from Charlie Cox talking about Born Again and being like, yeah, it'd be great if we could get Tatiana Maslany for like an episode or two. Like,
hang on.
Yeah, this is the great thing about having this, you know.
She-Hulk, like, and Daredevil fastball special. A la Colossus and Wolverine.
I was thinking they should start a law practice together.
I like the idea of throwing Daredevil at people way better than it's just funnier.
Also, did we get much more? I feel like we got more Billy Club action here than we had in most of the Netflix show.
It was called out a bit more. Yeah, there was a shot where they made
it
a point of showing the cable going out and like rewinding a little bit. Like I said, they give you a good sense of what the character is.
Yeah. I think this show has been building, as we talked about all along. It's like, you know, a showcase of microaggressions and sometimes macroaggressions.
Yeah.
And I think elevating that to this point of having the villain, quote unquote, be a thing that people experience in real life, right? Like, all this stuff that happens to Jen at the end of this episode is stuff that actually happens. Like, this show is making a point with and capital letters. Yeah,
and a lot, you know, a lot of the stuff has happened to this episode. And I stumbled into an argument that Jamila Jamil was having with various dorks on the internet, and she was very, you know, very straightforward about it. She knew exactly what she was doing. She wasn't like, you know, I don't think there was any, I don't think she was kidding herself that she was going to change anybody's minds necessarily, but she was definitely not having it. And this was before this episode came out, and just like the number of people who were saying absolutely absurd things was disheartening. Every time I click on the sidebar on Twitter, I regret it. Well, almost. However, I did it again today. Yeah. So I can't stop doing it. And all the reaction seemed like over the top glowing.
Good.
For this episode and for Charlie Cox's appearance in the episode and how it made perfect sense. So that was nice to see.
One day that sidebar is going to have Kissinger in there, and you're going to be... it's finally going to be for the right reason.
Exactly, yeah, right.
I was going to say, I think one of the things that, you know, as I said, the show is making a point, and I saw some people complaining that it felt like a bummer given the earlier parts of the episode, and it's like, okay, I get that. But at the same time, you know...
And that's how I felt at the first watching, but we're
using comedy to make a point about something that is actually a very serious point. And if you don't like that, I recommend you not watch MASH because you'll be really disappointed.
Holy cow!
Got it. Holy cow! I did it.
Literally about to bring up MASH in my mini review that I'm about to do. Sorry, Dan. Have you finished your thoughts?
Oh, and just to say, I think that that's potentially also something what I like about the fact that it's. It elevates the show, right? When you're a show that can both be funny and make a point, that is something that, you know, is kind of a big deal. So
yep.
I was very big on this entire episode.
Perfect. Love you, Sammy. You nailed it. Took it right out of my mouth.
Thank
great
you.
Job.
Thank you.
This is a horny biff. It's great. It's I liked it a lot. Immediately when Matt walks in the room and he's like, I'm here. Perfect. I like that kind of entrance that winks to the audience. It's like when Don Cheadle replaced Mathematica 2000 with, and he just walks in. He's like, I'm here. It's me. Deal with it. And it's like, okay, we're going. And we have our main character be like, cool, that's it. And that's all you need. The audience is like, okay, that often probably doesn't even know that that's a wink to them, but like if you do, you're like, okay, fine, whatever. The main character's got it, we've got it, that's it. End of discussion. And it's funny because it makes sense in the scene too, because he's like, well, I'm going to testify against you in front of Congress, so that's a that's a bummer, but whatever, deal with it. We're still going to be friends. It's a professional setting. I loved the way Matt showed up. I loved how his arguments were cogent. And they actually underlined a lot of what having a secret identity means in the MCU or just in general in superheroing. I like that it's, as John said, from his Matt's own perspective in terms of him. And like, look, I got to keep the people close to me safe because he's not. Even Tony, I mean, Tony is the biggest idiot. It's like, hey, here's my address. Come blow me up with helicopter missiles. It's like,
I guess the thinking, I know, but I guess the thinking of, on She-Hulk's part and well, Banner sort of was outed in a way. Not exactly. I mean, because he was running around trying to be secretive and then, you know, Ross was blowing things up, chasing him.
Yeah.
But I think her thought process is more like, if anybody has any, you know, tries to do anything to my family, I will just smash them.
Yeah.
like, you know, when you're a Hulk, I will just smash you. I will bust in and I will smash you. Like, if the Kingpin decides to try and take down my family, I will bust into his hotel room and smash him.
Yeah.
I guess.
Except it'd already be dead, right? But, yeah. I mean, that's not a winning move for anybody. I mean, it's whatever. I don't want to get into
it. Right. I know. But so that my doctrine. Point is, I think I'm not sure what her thought process is there, but I guess that's the only thing I could come up
with. Well, my thought process is kind of based on what she said in the show is like, I don't want to be a Hulk, but she gets this job being a Hulk and she's kind of outed regardless. It's not a choice. Her day-to-day life is not to be a superhero. She does not want to be a superhero.
I mean, she chose to go Hulky and fight Titania in the courtroom.
That's true. Yeah. Okay.
You know, at Nikki's bidding. You know, at Nikki's suggestion.
Well, because she's Nikki Scratch.
She did also tell Nikki, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. I just don't think that she had thought through the ramifications as much. Yeah. And
I wouldn't have.
Yeah. Exactly. You know. And Matt's background is awfully, you know, also a lot more rough and tumble. I like this. The writing was great. The chemistry between Charlie Cox and Titania Maslany was incredible. I really loved it. It gave the character of Jen more of a chance to shine because it wasn't just comedy bits so much as just hanging out with the dude at the bar, which is, you know, if you're good at acting small in very discreet choices, that's a better setting than like throwing a car at somebody, you know, like that there's There's difference.
Guy's really hung up on the car throwing bit.
Well, that's manslaughter. That's vehicular manslaughter, where you pick up the vehicle and you slaughter a man. That's a different.
It's car slaughter.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Awesome.
Yeah. Long story short, I loved this episode. I liked it a lot. In terms of the tonal break between the final piece and the rest of the episode, it is unnerving this time when Jen looks to the camera and she's like, that's weird that you're still here. Like, why would you still be here? I thought we were done. And she's on edge and she doesn't know what's coming up. And, you know, what comes up is probably the lowest moment of her life, from what we know of the character. And I thought that was handled really well. I don't know how else you could have done this. Maybe with an extra episode, you could have had Daredevil show up in finale minus two, had a good fun episode, and finale minus one would have been the whole, suck all the air out of the room and have this thing happen at the stupid award show, and then a big finale episode. But I kind of like this, the way it was glued together, because it kept me off edge. I was so happy for her and Matt and for us. That was awesome. Daredevil versus She-Hulk. That's cool. I left unhappy, but in retrospect, I like it so much more for that. Like, I think it worked well. Cleverly done. So yeah, it's a good, strong, horny biff. And I like the fact that they're having sex. Not just them, but it's like the MCU is finally adopted the thing that, like, hey, you know what? People also interact when they're not trying to, you know, throw their hammer against a shield.
Also, that we didn't, you know,
I don't even know what that means.
We didn't immediately, like, kill someone.
Is that what the kids are calling it?
There wasn't a puritanical, like, oh, somebody, now, just because they finally got together means somebody died. No, they're both main characters. Neither of them is going to die.
She does mention being fridged. Now that I've had sex, am I going to be fridged? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, that's great. Moving on. Do we have any sweep? I and Bolt have seen something, but you have not. Yes. What other sweep Werewolf do we have? Werewolf by Night has come out. Yeah.
I thought there was something else we were going to discuss, but I'm totally blanking on it. There was a Black Panther trailer.
Well,
Yeah,
there's a new Wakanda.
Oh, my God. How did I say it?
Yeah.
I can't believe I forgot that Black Panther trailer, because it's amazing and there's a lot of meat on those bones. I couldn't remember it because I told Dan and Boltz that I was going to watch Werewolf by Night tonight, because I wanted to fix a cocktail and watch it in the dark. And I did not. Like, literally, like, around noon, like, so an hour or so after that, I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to have a beer and watch Werewolf by Night.
Bright sunlight.
No, it's in my office, which is, like, I closed it all off. I watched it in front on my computer, and I ate a sandwich and had a beer, and I watched it, and I liked it. I'm going to save the commentary on it, but yeah.
Yeah. I enjoyed it as well.
Yeah. I implore anybody to go check it out as soon as you can. But most importantly, Wakanda Forever trailer.
Winged feet.
Winged feet.
I think that's the most important thing to get out of it. Just two words, winged feet.
That don't look dumb. I mean, if you focus on their feet, the way the scene is set and everything, it's like, you're not laughing. You don't have time to laugh at those feet. This guy's going to mess you up too much for that.
Yeah. I like, I read, I think it was Entertainment Weekly had a big cover story on this stuff, and they had a few different stories they spun out of it, but they talked a bit about the development and how they sort of reimagined Namor for the MCU. And as someone who is not a super deep Namor fan. I don't know.
Namor.
Oh yeah, I went there.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting because they decided, like, let's move away from sort of the traditional, quote unquote Western view of Atlantis, right? And let's do a different take on that and sort of infuse it with this Mesoamerican feel and culture, and cast a Latino actor, Mexican actor, to play the character. And I mean, first of all, it looks amazing. Like,
yeah,
just gorgeous.
Yeah.
No surprise given the first Black Panther movie. But I think it's kind of...
He is Mexican.
Yes. I think it's kind of a fascinating way to cast this movie that is very much, you know... I read an interview in one of those articles where they had the actor talking about, like, look, this is Marvel, and they do their research, obviously, but they also, there's no substitute for bringing in people with right. this as a lived experience yeah. and who, you know, it's their life and their, you know, their heritage and everything. And so no surprise also, I think that Ryan Coogler as the director who, you know, infused so much of his own experience into Wakanda and, like, you know, telling those stories, you know, would be sensitive to how he portrayed
yeah.
this other culture. And I think it looks really interesting. I like that they've kept it just enough of a like question mark of like, how is this plot like working? Like, what is the story? And you know, all that just to, you know, keep you on your toes. I appreciate that a lot. And yeah, I'm excited to see it. I hope I get a chance to see it in the theaters, but yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. We'll find a way.
Are you coming down and babysitting? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah. Okay. Honestly, right. I would kind of. I mean, I don't know if you're going to trust me with your baby, but yeah.
No, I really don't.
don't. Yeah, don't trust me with your baby. don't do it.
John.
Yeah. The other thing we get a glimpse of in this trailer is Ironheart. A little
yes.
bit more.
Yeah.
Get to see her in the suit, which looks fun. So, good. And that's a good, if you've never read that comic book, like, you know, the first run is very good.
I've never read that. Doesn't yeah. Tony Stark end up being her Jarvis?
Yeah.
They can,
which I would love it if they would do, but I don't think they'll do that, but I would love it if they did.
You kind of feel like A, they could throw enough money at him, but B, he'd right. also be like, yeah, I don't need the money. Like,
no, I know, but I mean, it's also less of a commitment, right? I mean,
sure,
he doesn't have
right.
to show up. He doesn't have to get in shape. He doesn't have to do anything. He can walk over to a studio. He probably doesn't even
leave his house. Yeah,
right. And just do the lines and get, like, I don't know how much they pay for that, but probably a fair amount of
who's
money.
The real question to
me plays Vision? Who plays Vision?
Bettany.
Paul Bettany.
Thank you. Yeah, I would be really funny if Downey had like an inverse Paul Bettany, where Bettany starts out in the suit and then becomes a real thing, and then Downey starts out as a real thing and just ends up being a disembodied voice in a suit. I think that'd
the
be fun.
The only argument against it that I can think of is he sucks all the air out of the room. He's
exactly.
That's such true. An important part of the
That's
continuity,
true.
And also in this one being dead as opposed to in the, you know, comics where he's, I believe, not.
Yeah, there's something like
he's supposedly, you know, he's
temporarily dead.
His consciousness is downloaded.
He's in like
something.
A coma or whatever. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like,
I ridiculous. Worry that would just have too many people. It would just be distracting, right? Like, I worry that is a concern in the same way that we just talked about with, you know, Bruce or
right.
Daredevil
it's easier to do in the comic books because no one's actually voicing it. There's no like big personality behind the character.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I like Tony Stark. Tony Stark. In Ironheart suit would only undermine the character. It would serve no other purpose.
A challenge.
We did get a bit of that in Spidey, the first one,
mm-hmm.
Homecoming. Mm-hmm. And I think it kind of undermined it. Like, they didn't need to do that to him, but they did, and it was fun and it worked out. But Tony as surrogate. Abstract parent figure, I think, has been done with Tom Holland Spidey, and I don't think it needs to be done, and I don't think it's appropriate to be done in this case.
Yeah, I tend to agree. So, I don't know how they're going to handle that. It's an interesting story. It's an interesting introducing that within the confines of Black Panther is also interesting. I thought in some of the articles they talked about, you know, her and Shuri in their relationship and having these two characters who have different backgrounds but have a lot in common, like, is kind of an interesting dynamic. Obviously,
I think in the comic book she ends up she's a, you know, she's from meager,
she's from Chicago, and there's a shot at Chicago in this trailer.
She gets into MIT, right?
Yeah,
And is able to you know, use resources there. In order to, I mean, she's already putting together a suit, but then she gets to MIT and is able to like really make it go.
It also fits very nicely with the final scene of the first Black Panther, which is
that's basically where I was going with that. It's like that's sort of a surrogate for getting into MIT, right? Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming that what the Wakandan program for bringing up.
Well, and they are. I know they actually shot
crap all countries like the United States.
they actually shot some of it around here at MIT.
Oh, yeah?
So I know that's part of it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
They did shoot here. So I'm sure that will continue to be part of it, at least in some way. Also, can I add a thing that I actually just realized, which is very funny, which is I had remembered that in Homecoming, his suit lady, Karen, is Jennifer Connelly, but
yeah,
it was not until this very
Bettany.
Moment that I realized that
Paul Bettany. No,
that's really
joke.
Funny.
I don't know
how I missed that. These many years later.
Yeah. She's great by herself. Like there's no, it's not like, oh, we just got
it's an extra right? little level there. Yeah.
John and I of a certain age are like, yeah.
Yep.
Whatever. I've seen the Rocketeer.
Cool.
Yep.
Yeah. What? She's great in The Rocketeer. Come on. Who are you? What are you doing?
She's great in everything.
I feel like...
I feel like
a lot of this show is just three men wrestling, trying to have two people get on top of the other one until the show ends and just...
Yep.
It's like three brothers just being total jackasses to each other.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I've got two brothers, so let's go.
Well, there's no wonder you're so quick on the draw all the time.
These are my surrogates.
Yeah, right out of the gate, freaking John is giving a throat to the punch. A throat to the punch, a punch to the throat.
More likely a throat to the punch the way I do it. They were older brothers. So
I'm sorry. No. Well, I've been an older brother. I mean, I don't wrestle with my sister at all, but like, yeah. So, final thoughts on Wakanda Forever?
I will go see this movie. I have
bought tickets to go see this movie. Yeah.
I haven't bought tickets yet, but I usually don't. I don't have too much of a problem getting.
I gotta convince my wife to play hooky. That's the problem. It's like I gotta convince her to take a day off and see it because we can't go at night anymore or on the weekend, really. Unless we can convince somebody to watch the kid for a few hours. And I don't think we're there yet. So, we'll figure it out.
I don't think Guy's there yet either.
Mm-hmm. Also true.
Yeah.
Do we have
might
any
need
other...
to take some classes first?
Do we have any other sweep?
Not that I recall. Let's just call
I them. Honestly after after saying hey Werewolf by Night watched in the day still worked and Wakanda Forever is really it that is a tough thing to pull off. A sequel in anything is difficult to pull off. I feel pretty great about this one after having seen the trailer. I am eager to talk about that as much as we can in our is so much feeling wrapped up in. There's a reason that they've got Jackass Todd doing the Wakanda Forever thing, right? Or what is it? The Get Out is like, I would have voted for Obama three times, kind of thing. Like, there's a limit to the to what you can express without having lifetime of experiences behind you to form those opinions, kind of thing. But that said, man, this movie looks amazing, and I cannot wait to watch it and learn from it and just have a great, great time.
Yeah, looking forward to it. All right, well, that is all we got time for this week. We will, of course, be back next week to cover the finale of She-Hulk. Lots of questions, lots of stuff to see how it plays out. But until then, of course, if you would like to reach us, you can do it at biff@theincomparable.com or at BiffCast on Twitter. You can send in your letters, your thoughts, your questions, your comments. I will share this, which I really enjoyed. Reader Rodney pointed out that Marvel.com is posting a photo of Mephisto every day this October. Quality, super quality.
That's great.
You can send us your thoughts Twitter or email. And of course, I would like to thank my co-hosts as always for being here. John Maltz, thank you for joining us.
Dan, this episode already came to a very satisfying conclusion. Trust me.
That makes me uncomfortable.
It should.
Guy English, always a pleasure.
I really expect her to say more than once at the end. I wanted her to lean a little bit harder into that silly joke.
We all got it. Yeah,
I thought that was perfect.
I thought it was perfect. I thought that was great. It was pretty good.
It makes me laugh.
Yeah. If you are interested in Andor, and you should be, because it is a terrific television show, please listen to Dan, Tony, and Kat on A Complicated Profession. I don't know what they have to say about this latest episode, but I'm excited to hear it. It's legitimately
also Star Trek is a good show.
Yeah, but there's Lower Decks is on now, which, you know, fine.
Yeah, which is great.
Yeah, I enjoy it, but I mean, Andor is actually just good.
No, Andor is
just
amazing.
Good TV. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you everybody out there for reading the transcripts and, of course, for supporting the show. We really appreciate it. We'll see you next week.